This is ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
That's right. Can you dig it?
It's time for 2 hours of the best sports talk on the airwaves.
Can you dig it?
The Jordy Holtberg Show with your host, the Blonde Bomber himself.
Can you dig it?
Jordy Holtberg.
Away we go with the bad news in Pelicans land. The Cajuns get what their head coach says is the best win of their season. LSU trying to right the ship as they get ready to head to Mizzou. And all the LSU gymnastics team trying to survive and advance and maybe, just maybe, be that championship team that's evaded them for year after year after year. All these stories and much, much more coming your way today, Thursday, April 18th, the year 2024. My main man, James Mesh, back in the regular studios of the EBCO development, where he is guiding us, navigating us for the next 2 hours till we reach our final destination. He's on the campus of Delta Media, where you'll find ESPN 1037 Lafayette Head West, ESPN 1041 in Lake Charles. Thrilled to be there as well. Streaming all over the world. And you'd be amazed how many people text me and say things. And I'm very, very flattered and honored. ESPN Southwest Louisiana.com. It's free and it's available for you and yours. The phone calls that we take each and every day, or that are available each and every day, are on the Mike's Marine Hotline at 337-706-0111. 337-706-0111. I got a text from my buddy, James Mesh, saying I'm banned from the Pelicans and the Smoothie King Center forever. And I kind of felt the same way. Went back-to-back games. And the Pelicans lost both of them to the LA Lakers. First time, regular season finale, blown out. Wasn't even close. They looked like deers in headlights. They looked shell-shocked and weren't ready for the big stage at all. I really thought that they would come out and play well, and I thought they would win in the first play-in tournament game. Well, I was wrong. And to make matters worse, Zion Williamson is, in all likelihood, well, let's just say it, he's done for the season, because this team's not going to survive in advance. They may win tomorrow, but I don't think they will. Not against Sacramento. You know how they say it's hard to beat a team twice? Even harder to beat a team three times in a row? Well, the Pelicans have beaten Sacramento five times in a row. I just don't see it happening. I think their season comes to a screeching halt Friday night, but we saw a glimpse of what Zion Williamson was purported to be. Now, whether he could do it on a consistent basis, that's what separates the greats from the good. But he was great. He was great against LA on Wednesday. He was great. Or Tuesday, 40 points. 11 rebounds, single-handedly took this team, put them on his back, and they went to town. They ended up losing. The Lakers advance. And now Friday night, it's win, you move on, lose, you snooze. Season's over. Let's go to Cancun, Cozumel, Boca Raton, Cabo San Lucas, wherever you want to go, that's where you go. And they'll take on Sacramento 8:30 Friday night inside the Smoothie King Center. So we'll have more on that. Transfer portal is open for football. We'll talk with Preston Guy, TigerBait.com, and find out what the heck LSU is going to do. There's a couple of good defensive linemen that are out there, and LSU needs to figure out a way, come up with the dollars and the cents in the NIL package, because that's what they want. That's why they're moving on from one school to the next. It's not about, these guys have all played. They've all done a good job where they were. Now they want the money. They just want the money. So we'll talk with Preston Guy on that. We've got Bob Rose normally on a Tuesday, but because of all of our baseball coverage that day, and then we were off yesterday because of the Astros, we're going to get Bob Rose on as we are 1 week away from the NFL draft. And with that in mind, before we go any further on, I did hear the tail end of your show there, James, and it had to do with the draft. So let's get the sounds like an appropriate time since we talking about Bob Rose, the Saints, the NFL draft. It would be a good time to introduce the poll question to this show and this show's audience.
Absolutely. And of course, it is Saints draft talk related. And now that we're a week away, what position do you think the Saints end up going with? Not necessarily a specific player, but what position do you think the Saints take at 14 or in the first round if they decide to trade up? 89% of the votes have said offensive tackle. 4% of the votes have said wide receiver. 0 votes have said defensive line. And the last 7% have said other. So plenty of other positions to choose from. Maybe it's a Brock Bowers if he falls to 14. Maybe it's a cornerback that you could take, because I know the Saints, you never know if you end up do trading Marshawn Lattimore. There's plenty of options out there.
Boy, it just seems like everybody and their aunt and their sister and their grandmother and their grandfather and their whatever is pointing toward offensive line. I'm surprised at this point in time that the 89% is not like 98%. I'm kind of surprised by that. You know, do the Saints trade up? Do they stay put? Do they trade back? Who knows? Who knows? All I know is this. I have zero excitement level for this draft when it comes to the New Orleans Saints. Zero. Now, that's just me. That maybe that's my fault. I do. You know, I understand needs and all that kind of stuff. I do. I understand it. But the Saints, they may take two offensive linemen with their first two picks in this draft. It wouldn't surprise me in the very, very least if they did that. And, you know, that's like a team that, just likes to, baseball team that just wants to bunt and bunt. Man, I want teams to swing for the fences. It's like a team that wants to get it inside to Zach Edey all night long. Okay, but give me the team that shoots the threes. That's what I like. That's what I want. So this draft doesn't excite me. But anyway, go to X, go to Facebook, and let's figure it out. Give your opinion on all of that, and we'll keep updating you throughout the course of the program. There you go. Scott Rabelais will join us to start off our number two. The number two ranked LSU gymnastics team is in Dallas to kick off competition at the NCAA championships. They'll be in the first session of semifinal action this afternoon at 3:30 our time. LSU will go up against third-ranked California, 12th-ranked Arkansas, and Stanford in session one. And then number one, Oklahoma, number four, Florida, number five, Utah, and number eight, Alabama will compete in the second session. So as you can see, just like in every sport, the SEC is well represented with LSU, Arkansas, Oklahoma, Florida, Alabama, five of the eight schools still in the hunt, all coming from the league where it just means more. So here's how it works. There's four teams in session one, four teams in session two, the Elite Eight. The top two teams from each semifinal will advance to the NCAA championship final, the Final Four, on Saturday, April 20th, this Saturday at 3 p.m. our time. Both of today's semifinal competitions in Fort Worth will be televised nationally on ESPN2. So good luck. We'll talk to Scott Rabelais of The Advocate, who is in Fort Worth, to cover that. We'll also kind of wrap up his thoughts on Scottie Scheffler, the Masters, and all of that. So we look forward to that. Mike Hugenin will join us as well a day after Hump Day with Hugenin. And we'll go over some things going around. What were his thoughts on some of the spring football games going on around and stuff like that. So speaking of football, two more LSU Tigers entered the transfer portal, bringing the total to 3. The latest are wide receiver Kai Preen and tight end Connor Gilbreth. They join edge rusher Jackson Howard, who officially entered on Tuesday after announcing his intentions a while back. Attrition is normal. Attrition is expected. And believe it or not, it's needed too. LSU's looking to add multiple defensive tackles from the portal. And if there's another high profile player or two, why wouldn't you go and scoop them up? Particularly after what we saw in the spring game, maybe that defensive secondary isn't as good as we think it is. So LSU will probably need at least a couple more roster spots to open up. Matt Degg said the Cajuns played their best game of the season. I'm like, really? How's that? Well, they did so with an 8-1 win Wednesday over the Southeastern Lions at the Teague. According to Coach Deggs, he said, I thought it was one of our better games of the year. Just top to bottom, no errors, very efficient offensively, and got a great start out of Blake McGeehee. Everything was working. That win came after a 15-8 win over the Lions in Hammond on Tuesday and got UL's record to 30-9 on the season. That's really, really impressive. McGee went 5 shutout innings to improve to 2-1 on the season. So a great start before the much anticipated trip to Coastal Carolina coming up this weekend. So there you have it. So NBA takes a day off. We'll have Pelicans taking on the Sacramento Kings, and we'll have the Chicago Bulls taking on the Miami Heat in the East for the final playoff spots in each division. The Lakers advanced in the West, and they just have the Pels number. They just do. But anyway, such a sad, sad testament with Zion Williamson being out. He was really, really good. C.J. McCollum couldn't throw it in the ocean. Brandon Ingram, when he was in, the Pels were trailing by double digits. They took him out. The Pels came back, even took the lead, and he sat most of the game. Now, with Zion out, Brandon Ingram, all the focus and all the emphasis switches over to him. I just don't see how they can do it. I just don't. Anyway, we'll take our first time out of the day. When we come back, the portal is open, and we'll get Preston Guy's answer to why, oh, why, there were so many separations. For instance, a receiver getting 17 yards of separation on LSU spring game's first play. LSU's defense cannot possibly be that bad again, right? We'll discuss next.
You're listening to ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, your home for the best local sports talk in Southwest Louisiana.
We're back 19 minutes after the hour on this Thursday, April the 18th. We begin today with a little bit of LSU football. Spring game just completed. Transfer portal open now. And if Brian Kelly doesn't know what he needs to know by now, he does. He does. LSU's defense allowed 5 plays of 30 yards or more in a spring game. I don't know. I don't put much stock in a spring game, but based upon what I saw a year ago, that was troubling to me. Preston Guy, TigerBait.com. He was there. He follows it all. Should I be worried? Should I be hitting the panic button, Preston, already? This defense can't be any worse.
Panic button. I wouldn't say you're at a panic button yet, Tim. Let me add some silver lining to that. So I can think of 4 of those 5 plays you named right off the top of my head. 3 of them occurred with Garrett Nussmeier in the game. They were the 3 touchdown plays, right? And Garrett Nussmeier, while he was out there, was just, I mean, he was slicing and dicing, Jordy. I mean, he looked like a calm, cool veteran out there on his way. We said 3,500 yards a couple weeks ago. I think I think from what I've seen, I think 4,000 is a more realistic prediction. He's going to be having a monster season. The fourth I can recall off the top of my head was true freshman Colin Hurley with a 64-yard bomb to Kai Preen.
Preston, wait a second.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Wait a second. I wasn't there. I just saw highlights of guys running down the field, and no one even close. Not 20 yards of separation. So, you've had all this spring to wait. Time out, Preston. Let me finish. All this yards of separation. New defensive coach was supposed to have better players back there, and they don't know where they are or what they're doing.
Yeah, no, it was rough when Garrett Nussmeier was out there, and they played poorly when Garrett Nussmeier was out there. There was one of the touchdown plays where he stepped up in the pocket and threw it deep to Xavion Thomas. There were two receivers open for touchdowns on that play because they called cover three and they ran cover two. So, yes, what we saw while Nussmeier was out there, very concerning. However, here's the silver lining for you now. When Garrett Nussmeier was not in the game, they only allowed one touchdown all game long. And when the other two quarterbacks ran with the ones on offense against the ones on defense, they didn't do diddly squat. So really the only who was able to do much of anything against this defense was Garrett Nussmeier.
So what you're telling me then is Garrett Nussmeier is better than Jaden Daniels, and the receivers we have are better than Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr. Because the defense didn't lose as many players as this prolific offense did. So you're telling me that what LSU has coming back offensively is as good, if not better, than what we had last year?
No, that's ridiculous. But, I mean, we saw the first team offense do exactly that last year against the defense. You know, it's not like the defense looks worse.
So what you're saying is the defense has gotten no better.
Here's the deal, though, Jordy. Last year, the twos and threes were also doing it to the defense. It doesn't matter who rolled out there, that defense was getting sliced and diced. It's a stark contrast in that at least once Nussmeier was out of the game, they showed you something. And I think we all know there's a lot of room in between where they were last year and a defense that resembles anything that we would call good. And, you know, when we're talking about that territory, you know, there's silver linings to approach. Like, you're looking to see some improvement. You're not looking to see a defense day one where you're like, oh, yeah, they're good. Let's see if you can continue to take steps in the right direction. And there was some optimism to that. There was because, you know, they did play well at times in this game. I mean, Gabriel Relaford was a real bright spot. Kylan Jackson, he played very well against those tight ends. You know, there were some things to like in this game, but I don't think this defense is there yet. I think they're still going to be – if they lined up today, they'd still be a pretty bad defense, but today doesn't matter. It's how they look come August.
Okay. So after the spring game was over and they look at the tape and they see what they have, everybody talks about defensive tackles in the portal. They need to go get one or two of those. Brian Kelly said that's all we want. Is he pleased with his secondary, or after what you saw, people running free – two receivers being wide open for touchdowns, does he reevaluate and consider, okay, let's go in the portal. There's a former Louisiana kid who went to Mississippi State who's in the portal and played safety. I mean, what do you think he's thinking?
I think he's thinking if he takes a DB at this point, it's got to be a very good one, one that you know for certain is going to be an SEC-caliber starter, NFL player-type player. They have 21 defensive backs on this team. That is a lot of your scholarships being used for one group, and you really just need some of these guys to step up and play well, play to their talent. I do think there's a lot of guys who aren't the caliber of talent LSU's used to seeing back there, and then there's guys who are, they're just young and whatever. Deshaun McBride, for example, he is a rangy, fast, good tackling, but he's a true freshman safety out there. Kylan Jackson's another one, you know. You really need these guys to start playing better. You know, things that stand out, that Xavion Thomas touchdown, You can't go out there and run, you know, a cover two. One of your players is manning up on somebody who's you know, zoned down low, and then leave your two deep safeties doing cover two coverage on a cover three call. Cover three coverage on a when one of them's missing. So it's communication and execution is the problem, and you got to hope that these guys can at least run with the best of the best come fall.
And isn't it safe to say that with everything downscaled in a spring game, Blake Baker is known for as a defensive coordinator who likes to blitz a lot. And I'm sure they didn't do that. So I'm sure that's part of what maybe part of the package that is it was missing that maybe helps those secondary players out.
Yeah, it's very, very vanilla. I mean, they might call three or four plays. So, yes, that is something that gets an excuse for the defense basically in every spring game ever to exist. You know, well, they're not trying to show anything. Brian Kelly came out and said that. Let me flip that coin on you real quick. Why is it on such a simple defense that you're still screwing up assignments? That is a red flag.
Yes.
So while the unit as a whole gets kind of a blanket excuse, for guys making mistakes in such a vanilla situation, that should raise some eyebrows. That should give you some pause and concern, because if these guys are screwing up the difference between, you know, three or four play calls, what's going to happen when you have a sophisticated playbook with advanced blitzes being dialed and different coverages? You know, that would raise my eyebrow a little bit, the fact that that's happening. You got to iron that out. And that's coaching. That's coaching. You know, if you cannot find guys who are doing the assignments as called, that's on you, Corey. You know, like, you got to go get that fixed.
What's going to happen when there's Lincoln Riley on the other side and there's Lane Kiffin on the other side? They're pretty good offensive play callers. So lots to consider there. Very good point on your part. Brian Kelly said he made a conscious decision to run at Harold Perkins to see how he did in the box in between the numbers. What was your evaluation of Harold Perkins?
Well, I remember one play in particular. It's that Caleb Jackson touchdown. And I remember watching the film on that on slow to figure out, how in the heck did this happen? You know, the offensive line got their push on the defensive line. We kind of expected that was going to happen. It wasn't anything where guys, you know, a lot of times you see plays like that, well, one guy got blown up and tripped up another. It was just solid blocks. Harold Perkins went in the middle, took the block on head on, and pushed him back a foot. The running back, Caleb Jackson, actually had to step out of the way. Harold Perkins took that on. It's not a sexy play, but that's how you're supposed to play linebacker. You push your guy back and make him go around into your teammate. That's a lot of what playing defense is. Well, then he goes straight into Greg Penn, who just plain misses the tackle. He bounces off like a bowling ball there, and that's kind of been the story of this defense the last couple of years, is you're just not making basic tackles in the box. You break one guy loose and your safeties are not nearly, you know, on that play they weren't in the right position to have anything near a tackle on Caleb Jackson. You cannot arm tackle him at speed, and that was what they were trying to do there. So, yeah, I think Harold Perkins is starting to do the little things better is the point of that story. The problem is you need 11 guys doing the little things better.
I mean, just take a prediction. How many transfer portal acquisitions does LSU get?
Two more, I should say. I do think they're going to go for a defensive tackle, like a good one. You know, there's guys like CJ West out there who I'm told we've been talking kind of like adding a body, a run plugger, that kind of a utility guy, something like that, kind of like Gio Paez is at Wisconsin. Well, from what I'm told, C.J. West, they consider an NFL player. And there's another group of five guy they're expecting to come out soon enough that is also considered an NFL player. And that's the kind of guys they want. We'll see. But the problem with a C.J. West is you want him, but so does everybody.
Absolutely.
The tackle market is brutal right now. So at minimum, a defensive tackle, maybe a second one, and then maybe a defensive back or running back based on your situation. I think either one of those two, you're only taking a really good one or if you get some news in the negative on Trey Holly, then you're going for a lukewarm right. body at running back.
He is Preston Guy. I'm doing the, you can't see me, but I'm doing the Johnny Manziel, both hands up, rubbing those fingers. show me the money, honey. Show it to me. Preston Guy, TigerBait.com.
I'm hearing they're in better position with that front than they were a year ago, just in case you're wondering. Right. I think they're doing better there.
Well, we'll see. This shouldn't take long, I don't believe, but we'll wait and see, and we'll certainly follow you, TigerBait.com, Preston Guy. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate your manipulating the days. So thank you very, very much. We'll take a quick time out here when we come back. Also, normally on a Tuesday, Bob Rose, it's the Black and Gold Report. Saints News Network dude coming up next.
Go check out our YouTube channel at @ESPN_SWLA for the latest episodes of Miguez Mindset, Over Par, and so much more. That's ESPN Southwest Louisiana Sports Station on YouTube.
We are back normally on a Tuesday, but today on a Thursday, it's the Black and Gold Report with our near and dear friend, Bob Rose of the Saints News Network. Oh, everybody's putting their mock drafts out now because we are 1 week away from Detroit City. Yes, indeed. Home of the NFL draft. Bob, good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
Good afternoon, Jordy. And I, for one, cannot wait for this draft. If nothing else, maybe I'll be able to get a little bit of sleep and rest from my own draft profiles and draft analysis that we do for the Saints News Network. So for me, it's more of a relief.
The Saints stand pat? Do they try and make a trade up? Do they make a trade back? What do you think the Saints do? They stay at number 14, or do they try and do something to generate some interest in their fan base?
Jordy, I think the Saints will have a lot of trade activity in this draft, but it's not going to be in the first round. I think they stand pat at 14, let the draft come to them, because if they go the direction that most of us think they will and should go, is offensive tackle. This is a deep position. So even if the top two or three tackles go, I believe you'll still be able to get a quality starter at 14. And you know, let's be frank, New Orleans really doesn't have enough assets to burn enough future assets to burn and move up to get their guy. As far as trading back, I see the logic behind it, but look at it this way. 22 years, Mickey Loomis has been the general manager of the New Orleans Saints. Not one time has he traded back in the first round. So while a lot of people want the Saints and hope the Saints will trade back, I can't see it happening.
So, James, read the poll question and see if Bob is surprised by the vote.
Yeah, Bob. So for our poll question of the day, we had asked everybody on Facebook and on X, now that we're a week away from the draft, what position do you think the Saints will address in the first round? 89% have said offensive tackle, 4% have said wide receiver, 0 votes have gone towards defensive line, and the last 7% have gone towards other.
I'm surprised.
James, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
James, it's a good question. And frankly, I think 89% for
it's low.
It's low. I think that should be 98% to 99% offensive.
That's what
tackle.
I said. Yeah.
listen, if a Brock Bowers or a Roma Dunze fall, I get how tantalizing it would be for the Saints to move up and add another weapon for Derek Carr and Clint Kubiak's offense. But you have tons and tons of problems at tackle. You don't know if Trevor Penning's going to develop. So far, he most assuredly has not. You don't know if Ryan Ramczyk's going to stay healthy. And Andres Pete is not currently on the team. You have to go offensive tackle with this pick. Like it or it's not flashy, but you have to. You have no choice.
It appears to me, everybody knows there's going to be a lot of quarterbacks moved. Everybody believes there's going to be 3 wide receivers taken probably before the Saints are at number 14. And now I'm seeing all kind of projections there, you know, whether it's Joe Alt or it's J.C. Latham or it's Talisi Fuaga. There's a Troy Fautanu. and Fashanu. These names are hard for me to pronounce, but there's a lot. There's projected to be about five offensive linemen picked in the top 14. That's crazy.
Yeah, but I could see it happening. If you're a Saints fan and you're a person that wants and believes that New Orleans should and will go tackle, the more quarterbacks, more receivers, more defenders get taken off the board in those 13 picks, the better off your team is going to be. This team is going to be. But even if all five of those tackles come off the board, Jordy, and I completely can see that circumstance happening, you still have a player like Tyler Guyton from Oklahoma, Amarius Mims from Georgia. Those are two guys that I believe will go by the end of the first round. It might be a little bit of a reach at 14 to get them, but again, you need a tackle. You have no choice here. And the Saints painted themselves in this corner. If Fuaga, Fashanu, Fatanu, if they're all off the board by 14, then you have to go Mims or Guyton here. You just have to.
Yeah. What odds do you give of the Saints using their second round pick and getting another offensive lineman?
If they get the tackle that they believe can be a day one starter in the on day one, then I believe that they'll go another direction with their second round pick. Maybe defensive tackle, could be wide receiver or tight end, maybe safety, an underrated need that I've highlighted several times. So I don't put it beyond the realm of possibility. You have second round tackles like the kid from BYU, not even going to attempt to pronounce his name.
Right.
Patrick Paul, Jordan Miller from Arizona. Those are first round type talents too. So I wouldn't be mad if the Saints double dipped. Again, you don't know how Ryan Ramczyk's knee is going to hold up. And so far, Trevor Penning has shown us zero development whatsoever. So you can make a strong case that the Saints need two tackles out of this draft.
Okay. I understand drafting, and I know teams need quarterbacks, and I know it's positioned by, draft by positional need so many times. Teams want to have a guy they can plug and play right away. I understand that. But who's the best overall prospect in this draft? If you just put them all in a bag and you could pick any of them out of there, in other words, you had every position, you had all pros across the board. Across the board. Who's the best football player in your opinion?
Marvin Harrison Jr., the receiver from Ohio State. Okay. I like Neighbors. I love a few of these offensive tackles. I like Dallas Turner, Jared Verse a lot. But Marvin Harrison looks to me like a generational type of receiver. Bloodlines from his father, a Hall of Fame receiver in his own right. And frankly, I think the son is more explosive than the father ever was. I think Marvin Harrison Jr. single-handedly transforms an offense. I keep thinking about back in 1998 when the Minnesota Vikings drafted Randy Moss and what he did for that entire offense. The quarterback, Randall Cunningham, Robert Smith, Chris Carter, Jake Reed, they were all better because of the addition of Randy Moss. That's what type of football player Marvin Harrison Jr. is.
I'd be remiss if I didn't come out with this story that came out about Bill Belichick and Robert Kraft talking to the owner of the Atlanta Falcons and telling him don't trust him and all that kind of stuff. What's your take on all? I mean, Raheem Morris, Bill Belichick. Raheem Morris, Bill. It's like, what are they doing? What happened?
Yeah, I really don't know. That's like asking me if to choose between a Mercedes and a Volkswagen Rabbit. Used one at that. Raheem Morris, outstanding defensive mind, but his head coaching record, track record, not really none to speak of, as far as success. Bill Belichick, one of the top two or three coaches we've ever seen in this profession, and maybe a top 10 coach in any sport, that supersedes any sport. Belichick's older. You might only get a couple of years from him before he does, decide to hang it up and retire, walk away from the sport altogether. But if you have the opportunity to get Bill Belichick to build your team and install a winning culture that the Atlanta Falcons has really never consistently had, to me, there's no decision to be made here.
Do you think he'll ever coach again in the NFL?
If he does, it'll have to be next year. I mean, you know, the sands of time even run out for a guy like Bill Belichick, and he is getting up there in age. The New York Giants, I like Brian Daboll as coach, but he's got to be on the hot seat coming in. Belichick has made no secret that he would love to go back to New York and coach for the Giants. I could see that scenario happening if Daboll doesn't do well. What if Mike McCarthy doesn't do well this season in Dallas and Jerry Jones pulls the trigger there? We saw Belichick be able to end his career dealing with Jerry Jones. Why can't Bill Belichick do the same thing?
I think that's the only place he can go. If you had to, asked me, I'd say, well, I don't think McCarthy's going to make it, and I think that would be it. Because Jerry's getting up there, right?
Yep.
And he wants to win, purportedly. So, anyway, current Saints roster, who has to make the big quantum leap next season for this team to have a snowball's chance in you-know-what, to make it to the playoffs and to cause some damage in the playoffs? Who has to be that guy?
Trevor Penning. And you know, let's assume that the Saints are going to draft a tackle. Speaking of the sands of time, they're running short on poor Ryan Ramczyk, as great as he has been. You need Trevor Penning to make that quantum leap, as you talked about. You also need players like Marshawn Lattimore to get back to form, stay on the field. Isaiah Foskey to make a big jump. Kendre Miller to make a big jump. Same with A.T. Perry. But to me, it starts and ends with Trevor Penning. If he jumps up and is what a lot of us thought that he could be coming out of the draft a couple of years ago, this Saints offensive line all of a sudden looks pretty darn good with Penning, Ramczyk, as healthy as you can make him, and a number one draft choice in there. So it's got to be Trevor Penning.
What does a Penning do in the offseason to get better? I mean, I understand wide receivers can run routes and catch balls, and quarterbacks can do all that, and running backs get in great condition. But what does an offensive lineman do to get better?
I really don't know. In Trevor's case, he's got to work on his footwork. That and just being trapped inside his own head, have been his two biggest enemies. He's got to just play the game how he grew up playing it, get out of his head. That's on the coaches to help him do that. And, he's got to work, got to do a lot of speed work and footwork, agility work, things like that. Just get quicker in that lower body.
Okay, last question. I'll let you get out on this one. Let's rank the quarterbacks from Bob Rowe's perspective. So we know there's Jaden Daniels and Caleb Williams and Drake May and J.J. McCarthy and Bo Nix and Michael Penix. I think those are probably the top six quarterbacks. How would you rank them?
And I know this is unpopular. I've always been a Penix guy. I would take Penix first overall.
Wow.
I'm just that big a fan of his game, the way he processes, and his physical attributes. After that, I'm sticking with the physical attributes, and I'm going to rank Jaden Daniels number two. That kid read defenses a lot better than what I thought he could last year in the SEC with LSU. After that, Caleb Williams, I mean, just a wonderful athlete, and can make plays that just boggles the mind. After that, and again, unpopular, for you SEC fans that hated him, but Bo Nix. I've always liked Bo Nix's game, even when he was inconsistent at Auburn. After that, I'd probably put J.J. McCarthy, because this kid's just a winner. He elevates his teammates around him. Might not have the physical attributes that the other guys that I ranked ahead of him, but like I said, he's just a winner and he makes plays. Last but not least, I'd put May from North Carolina. Not impressed by that young man whatsoever. I'm rooting for him. I'm rooting for all these kids. I'm not impressed by what I've seen from both men.
Michael Penix. We'll go out on that note. Bob Rose, Saints News Network. You're the best. Thanks for stopping driving. You had me worried there for a second, but thank you.
Well, I was going to tell you, if the cops pulled over, we were never.
No, I know. You just hit the disconnect button quickly. All right, Bob. Take care, buddy. We'll talk to you next week on a Tuesday and get your final picks. There you go. Bob Rose, Saints News Network. We'll take a timeout, wrap up hour number one, set the stage for hour number two next.
You're listening to ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station. Your home for the Houston Astros.
We are in the state of Texas, and that leads me to the fact that LSU women's basketball player Haley Van Lith is going to transfer to TCU for her final season of college eligibility. So we wish Haley Van Lith the best. She averaged 11.6 points, 3.6 assists in her only season at LSU. And now she's moving elsewhere and she's going to TCU. So good luck to her. Coming up, hour number two, Scott Rabelais will join us from Fort Worth, Texas. See how we tie all this together? The LSU Gymnastics Elite Eight taking place today. LSU, one of five SEC teams, still in contention with the hopes and dreams of winning a national championship. It would be the first in program history for LSU, and I think they got a great chance to do it, but they've got to be one of the top two teams out of their four-team regional to advance to Saturday's Final Four. So we'll talk to Scott in Fort Worth and plus get his thoughts, wrap up the thoughts from Augusta and the Masters with Scottie Scheffler and that four-stroke win in that one. We'll talk about the Pelicans with their big matchup against Sacramento on Friday night. Win, survive in advance, lose, off to the beaches. And then Mike Hugonen. We'll talk about a piece of legislation that took place today in the state of Virginia, where Virginia law will allow schools to pay athletes for NIL, directly pay athletes. So it's a first. Does it give Virginia a significant recruiting advantage, or does it provide a catalyst for similar changes elsewhere? We'll talk about that and much more. Hour number two, straight ahead, the Jordy Helfrich Show, ESPN 1037 Lafayette, ESPN 1041 Lake Charles, your home for the LSU Tigers and the Houston Astros.
This is ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
That's right. Can you dig it?
It's time for 2 hours of the best sports talk on the airwaves.
Can you dig it?
The Jordy Holtberg Show with your host, the Blonde Bomber himself.
Can you dig it?
Jordy Holtberg.
Hour number two of two, and away we go on a Thursday, April 18th, the year 2024. James Mesh back in the Master Control Suite inside the EBCO Development Studios, which are on the campus of Delta Media, where you'll find ESPN 1037 Lafayette. Head west, we'll find us on ESPN 1041 in Lake Charles, streaming all over the world thanks to our free mobile app, ESPN Southwest Louisiana.com. We begin hour number two with a good friend who has quite the gig, and he's earned it. He goes to the Masters each and every year, and now he is in Fort Worth, Texas, where LSU Gymnastics is in the Elite Eight, which begins in about an hour and a half, and they hope to advance to the Final Four on Saturday, and maybe, just maybe, that long, elusive national championship awaits this LSU team. Of course, I'm talking about the one and only Scott Rabelais, who is staff writer for The Advocate, been around the block a day or two. Scotty, thank you so much for your time. You are the Marco Polo of The Advocate. You're traveling everywhere.
Lately, I have been, yes. I went to Albany for the regional and and then with the Masters, I called my brother who came to the Masters with me this year for a couple of days. I said, if I go to the Final Four in Cleveland, I'm going to go home for a day. You have to pack. I'm going to pack a bag to bring to the Masters. You have to bring it for me. And I won't even see you. He said, okay, I'll do it. But I didn't have to do that. But yeah, it's back on the road again in Fort Worth for the NCAA Gymnastics at a really cool arena, Dickey's Arena, built a few years ago here in Fort Worth. Very nice. Looks like an old field house, but it's really modern inside. One of the nicest arenas I've ever been in. A nice venue for women's gymnastics.
All right, we'll get to that in a minute. Did you read the story about the guy that worked at Augusta who is now facing a long prison sentence if found guilty for stealing all the memorabilia where he worked for years and years? Can you believe that?
No, I did not heard that. I've not heard that story.
Oh, you gotta look that one up. But he is for about 20 years. He was just taking stuff, and wow, he's moved, and they caught up with him. But anyway, we had a poll question the other day, and we'll wrap up Augusta real quick. Our question was Scottie Scheffler. Boy, he has the demeanor. He certainly has the game. He certainly seems to have the temperament and things in the proper perspective. It's asking an awful lot, but, you know, so many things have to come into play. But could you possibly foresee him being the next in line that makes that run, kind of like what Tiger did and what Jack did? Is he that good in your book?
He's certainly the best right now. He's clearly the best in the world. I mean, he doesn't really have any holes in his game. So he's figured out his putting, which was kind of frustrating him late last year, maybe into the early part of this year. But he's got it all. Doesn't have exactly the swing you would want to teach somebody, especially the footwork. His feet slide all over the place. But you don't have to be perfect. It's just like, it's about making contact. It's like a shooter in basketball, right? You don't have to have the perfect form to be a great shooter, as long as the ball goes in the hole, and that's what he does. You know, people are starting to say, is he like Tiger or something like that? I think that's a long way to make that comparison. I mean, Tiger won 15 majors. Nicholas won 18 majors. Does he have the potential to win six or seven or eight majors? Yeah, I think so. I'd kind of be surprised if he only wins two Masters. You know, I think he could be he could certainly win another one or two, especially with Ted Scott caddying for him. He's got a tremendous game. But you know, there are a lot of players who've had these kind of couple of year runs. Johnny Miller in the 70s comes to mind. Tom Watson for a few years in the late 70s, early 80s. David Duval in the early 2000s, who was number one around the time when Tiger was having his period of dominance. Rory McIlroy, certainly, when he won like three majors in a very quick succession. Jordan Spieth, almost a decade ago now with Jordan Spieth. So, you know, and it's hard. It's like a spinning top. You know, it spins really fast and really tight, and then it's hard to get it back going again. And that could be the case. But he's got everything that you want. And as long as he stays hungry, and you know, and now he's about to become a dad. You know, that was a very famous thing at the Masters, right? He would leave if his wife went into labor. But I was talking to a guy next to me in the press building. I said, she's not going to call him, is she? He said, no, she's not going to call him on Sunday. Well, he's in the lead. He's got it all. I don't think he's done winning majors. But to get to double digits, only three golfers that's have hard. Done that ever. Jack and Tiger and Walter Hagen. Yeah. So that's a lot to ask.
I'm with you. All right. Another successful run at Augusta. Let's talk about this gymnastics team. Last year, lots of injuries. They fought. They had to get some breaks go their way. It's a really great program. This year, other than finishing runner-up in the regular season of the SEC, they won the SEC tournament, and they have just steamrolled across people. I don't know why I feel so confident about this club, other than the fact they got they're healthy and they got a superstar in Haley Bryant who just gets tens.
It's an excellent team, maybe the best team they've ever had. Certainly the best team they've had since like 2017, when you had Sarah Finnegan and Ashley Natch, who's now an assistant coach, and Maya Hambrick and McKenna Kelly, Mary Lou Retton's daughter, and they were national runner-ups, you know, back then. Maybe third that year. But that's the best team they've had since before the pandemic. They've got talent. They've got experience. They've got depth. They've been pretty healthy. You know, last year they made it here and made it all the way to the Final Four and finished fourth. But that was quite an achievement. They lost Kaia Johnson, one of their best gymnasts, in January to an Achilles injury. Of course, she's been back this year and done very well. But they've got all that. Like I said, a superstar leading them, Haley Bryant, won the AAI Award, which goes to the top senior gymnast in the country. And kind of like the gymnastics Heisman Trophy, but it's just for seniors. She's the top all-arounder. She's the top vaulter. She's got the career gym slam. You know, she's made tens on all four events. She did tens on all four events this year. And so she's tremendous. But she's not the only one. Connor McLean, who was the U.S. national champion 2 years ago, the all-around champion. That's the title Simone Biles won last summer. She's great.
And then and Kai Johnson mentioned Aaliyah Finnegan, Sarah Finnegan's little sister, had a had a perfect 10 on floor in their regional. They've got a lot. But, you know, at the same time, Oklahoma just keeps rolling along. I like an Oklahoma who's number one to John Curtis in football. They're not really the flashiest team you've ever seen, but they just do everything so well. They execute at such a high level. And they're going to be tough to beat. But it's gymnastics, and you got to go out there and do it. And someone could have a slip or a fall or a step out of bounds. And LSU's got to be there to pounce. And they got to get there first, of course. They got to win. They got to be one of the top two teams in today's semifinal to get there. But once they get there, you got a shot. But they still need a little help from Oklahoma and to be at their very best in order to win on Saturday.
How did Scott Rabelais become so observant and understanding of gymnastics? How did that come about?
You know, that's a good question, Jordy, because I still have a lot to learn about the different moves and the things that you what they call. Yeah, a lot of moves have a name, like the Yurchenko or the Schlurden or the this or that. I love you know college football season and everything, but I just have a naturally curious mind, and I get a little bit once I learn about something, I kind of want to move on to something else. And the gymnastics is one of those sports, and they deserve the coverage. I mean, you know, they've been so good for the last decade, really for the last decade or so. They're always they draw 12,000 fans a meet. You know, they're up there in terms of attendance, and they have great gymnasts, great athletes on their team. Haley Bryant is, you know, we're thinking of this. We did a podcast today for our website. Talking about, you know, this era of LSU athletes that we're in. And you kind of got to step back from it maybe in a few years. Think about it. The two Heisman Trophy winners in the last 5 years, and Paul Skeens and Dylan Cruz and Mondo Duplantis and Shakari Richardson and, Angel Reese, of course. And now you have Haley Bryant deserves to be up there with any of them. She may be the best gymnast they've ever had. But, to answer your original question, I was just curious. It was just fun. It kind of been a fun sport to learn more about. I'm awed by their ability to combine theatrics with athletic skill and to do it all with a smile on their face. And believe me, everybody you see compete today and Saturday, everybody's hurting a little bit somewhere after a 3.5 month long season, you know? And they are the toughest athletes, that I cover. And that includes the football players. They really are. And, they deserve a lot of respect pound for pound. They are really tough.
They're really good.
And they do a great job. And it's just been a very interesting sport to cover and to learn about.
Scott Rabelais, the advocate. Everybody talks about Texas, Oklahoma football coming to the SEC. I'm gonna tell you what, Oklahoma in gymnastics and in softball, it don't get any better than that. So they just have upgraded everything. Four events in a gymnastics competition. What's LSU's best event? What is the one that has Jay Clark biting his fingernails? Just let's just get through it as good as we can.
Well, floor is definitely their best event. They are number one in the country on floor. It would be an upset if 9-9-0 is like everything of 9-9-0 and above to 10 is really good. You know, really, really good. And it's usually a surprise if they don't go six straight 9-9-0 plus scores. Have to throw one out because you take the top best five scores and you average and you add those up, you throw out the lowest score. They're really great on floor. And like I said, Leah Finnegan's had a 10 on floor, three 10s on floor this year. Kai Johnson's had a 10 on floor. Haley Bryant's had a 10 on floor. Connor McClain could have a 10 on floor. They're really, really good. KJ Johnson shared the SEC gymnastics floor title with Kaya earlier this year, last month. So they're really great on that. Balance beam is the event that scares the bejesus out of any coach, whether your team is good at it or not, because it's such a little margin for error. It's a 4-inch wide beam, four feet off the ground, and it's really, really, you know, not a death-defying sport, but it's certainly a very dangerous sport. I remember when Dee Dee Bro was the coach, she'd always be like, kind of hiding behind an assistant coach or a trainer or something like that, because she could barely watch, especially these big meets, you know. But LSU's pretty good on beam. I think vault has been surprised, although they're in the top five in the country on vault. Vault has been one where they kind of hop the landings. If they're going to win the national title, they need to really stick those landings of vault. But beam is always a scary one for sure.
Well, Jay Clark has been a part of national championship teams when he was in Georgia. Now he's the head coach here, does a terrific job. just don't. I don't want to put the gree-gree on them or the jinx on them, but it seems like every year LSU wins a championship in something. I think this is the year gymnastics does it. I believe in what they've got. I think they've got depth. I think they're healthy, and they got that superstar. And that's what it takes in gymnastics, right? You gotta have good depth. You gotta be good that day, but talent always rises to the top. And boy, I just like their talent. I really do.
They've got all that. I mean, like I said, it's as good a team as they've had certainly since going back to 2017 or 2019. But you got to be on, and you got to hit. And like, they're already a championship team. They won the SEC championship meet in New Orleans.
Right.
That's a lot to beat Florida and Alabama and Kentucky. Yes. Had a real good team this year. It says a lot to win that meet. So they're a championship, and that gives them confidence for this one. But as Jay Clark likes to say, you can't play defense in gymnastics. You know, you can't control what the other team does. You just have to do your best. And Oklahoma, they had a 198.950 in the Big 12 meet, almost a 199. That's unheard of. Now, scoring is highly subjective in gymnastics. You know, you never know. You know, I don't know how that meet went, but they got tremendous scoring, and they've got about four all-arounders who are really good too, like ranked in the top 13 in the country, led by gymnast named Jordan Bowers. You'll see her tonight.
Mm-hmm.
They've got as good a shot as they've had, and they just need one little slip. I remember one year, Jordy, they were here in Fort Worth, and Oklahoma had a young lady step out of bounds on the floor. If they had another young lady step out on the floor, they had about three more gymnasts to go. LSU was going to swoop in and win the title. It can be that close sometimes. And LSU's just got to be in the position. If Oklahoma wobbles a little bit, and they, like I said, I think they're going to have to help them a little bit. If they do, LSU's got to be in position to take advantage.
Well, there's a new game out there. It used to be Where's Waldo? Now it's Where's Rabelais? Because there ain't no telling where he's going to be here today or where he's going to be the next time. But good for you, traveling the world, doing what you love to do. And coming down with the names of these gymnastic moves, I just know the Fosbury flop. That's all I know.
The Fosbury flop. Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one from the track and field days. Yeah, for sure.
That's all I can think of. But anyway, it should be interesting. Can't wait to read all about it with your coverage of it. And it's on ESPN2 starting today at 3:30. So I'm going to go check it out. Scott, thank you so much, buddy. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Jordy. Always a pleasure. Take care.
All right, buddy. You take care. Scott Rabelais in Fort Worth for the NCAA Gymnastics Championships. I just got a good stinking feeling about this. But don't take my word, because I thought the Pelicans were going to beat the Lakers the other day, but they didn't. So on Tuesday, they didn't. So anyway, we press onward. We're going to talk about these Pelicans as they get ready for the Sacramento Kings next.
Go sign up for our rewards club at ESPNSouthwestLouisiana.com so you can score tickets, gift certificates, and much more. This is ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
We are back as we continue on this Thursday, April the 18th. Still to come, Michael Huguenin will join us as we talk all things college athletics, like we always do. I can remember 5 years ago, Zion Williamson staring into a camera on draft night, and he had the magical two words, "Let's dance." For 36 minutes Tuesday night, Zion lived up to the billing. He was spectacular in front of a packed Smoothie King crowd, in front of a national television audience. It was his first postseason game. He'd been hurt so much, and the Pels weren't very good, but he was in it, and he did everything you could ask, and then some. He just didn't have any dance partners Tuesday night. The other guys on the court were pretty much no-shows. And the Pels lost 110-106 to the team they just can't seem to beat, the Lakers, in that play-in tournament game. Williams finished with 40 points, 11 rebounds, and 5 assists. Unfortunately, he had to exit the game, head to the locker room with 3:13 remaining. Turns out it was a hamstring injury, and he's done for the year. Every injury that the Pelicans have, I don't care if it's a hangnail or whatever, it's always evaluated in 2 weeks. You ever notice that? It's always 2 weeks, 2 weeks. Well, they say 2 weeks, but it's just, it's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. So now the Pelicans have to wait without Zion till Friday to punch their playoff ticket when they host the Sacramento Kings at 8:30 in a win or go home game. Pels are 5-0 against the Kings this season. I'm just saying. And they did beat the Kings 133-100 without Zion back in January. So it's doable, but these stakes are a lot higher. Sacramento's playing good, playing good. But on that night, with LeBron James, with Anthony Davis, Zion was by far best player on the court. Wasn't even close. He was 17 of 27 from the floor, 3 points shy of matching his career high in points. The problem is the other starters went a combined 13 of 41 from the floor. That includes 8 of 27 from the other big two of the big three. CJ McCollum, who was on fire carrying this club, was only 4 of 15. Brandon Ingram, 4 of 12. In fact, Ingram was so bad that he sat the final 7 minutes and 38 seconds of the game. Even when Zion got hurt with 3 minutes and change to go, it didn't put him back in. I thought it was a big mistake to start him. I really did. I thought you were rolling with Trey Murphy in there. Keep your continuity, man. Keep it rolling. But you know how they are with these quote-unquote superstars. Sometimes the ego gets in the way of things. If this thing, and now here again, you got the built, and this is what I hate about it more than anything. If you lose to Sacramento, you got the built-in excuse. Well, we didn't have Zion. This management has to do some really deep, hard looking at this lineup and what it has to do to get better. And I am not sold on the Brandon Ingram Zion Williamson combination. Just not. Jonas Valanciunas is done. They're going to find somebody else. He done. They got to get younger, more athletic at that big position. Now, he's a good player. Yes. But it doesn't fit with this team. It just doesn't. It's a young team. They got to get going. I think if they lose to Sacramento, I think there's a lot of changes coming. I think there's a lot of changes coming. I really do. But herein, they got the built-in excuse like they always seem to have. Hey, we were right there, but we lost Zion. Hey, we were right there, but Brandon Ingram missed so many games and it took him a while to get back in. You know, wasn't enough time to get him back in the rhythm of things. But all the time. All the time. You have to pick between Zion and Brandon Ingram. I doubted at times. I really did. I had to really sit down and think about it. Man, I'm going with Zion. And hopefully, the problem is with a hamstring, you can't do any cardio. You can't do anything. So what's Zion going to look like in 2 weeks? What's it going to look like? Doesn't take much to gain those pounds back. He lost 25 or so. I don't know. Where's his head? When he was dancing, man, it was sweet. It was sweet music. And the footwork was great. And the Smoothie King Center was rocking and rolling, baby. It really was. He's the best player on the court. But can he do it night in and night out? And that's what makes LeBron so remarkable. He's been doing it night in and night out for 21 years. It's ridiculous. He's a master of his craft. He really is. And I know a lot of people don't like him and this, that, and the other, the self-proclaimed king and all that. But I'm going to tell you, when he steps between the lines and he's got a ball in his hand, he's really good. He is one of the top players to ever lace up a pair of kicks and go bounce a ball and put it through a hoop. One of the best ever. ever. He's remarkable. So very, very disappointing for this Pelicans team. Very, very disappointing. And it was a flukish play. Very flukish. But that's what happens sometimes. And that's what makes these NBA playoffs so stinking unpredictable. How do you know what's going to happen from one game to the next? Injuries become so critical and so important. We'll see. But Zion, for one night in the playoffs, dude, you were awesome. You were awesome. Can you do it night after night after night, like the Jordans and the LeBrons and the Birds and the Magics and the Dr. J's and the Kareems, the great ones. And that's what separates it. That's what separates it. It's kind of like Scottie Scheffler. Can he do it year after year, major after major, like Jack did, like Iger did? Who knows? So much goes into it. Anyway, no NBA tonight. Pelicans and the Kings, Friday night, 8:30. Do not have a good feeling about this one. I just don't. But maybe I'll put the reverse on it. I keep picking the Pels to win at home. I'm not picking them to win tomorrow. I'm picking Sacramento to win. So maybe the reverse gree-gree will work. We'll see. Mike Hugenin joins us. All things college sports next.
You're listening to ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station and your home for the LSU Tigers.
Hi, we welcome you back. Hump Day Plus One with Mike Hugenin. We do it each and every Wednesday. Today we're doing it on a Thursday. Mike was very nice and kind to accommodate us after having a day off yesterday. A lot of things happening in the world of college sports, and we're here to touch upon it with Mike. Good afternoon, my friend. What's happening?
Yeah, the transfer portal in football and basketball, it's spinning wildly. It's interesting. The football, obviously not nearly as filled as the one in December, but the basketball one, it's mind-blowing. You can remake entire teams in 2 days.
Well, the biggest takeaway that announced by the NCAA is no limit to the number of times an athlete can transfer. They can go to four different schools in 4 different years,
assuming they have the correct academic credentials. Exactly. You're not going to be able to go somewhere and flunk every class and be eligible.
Right.
So staying academically eligible is key. But then again, especially at Power 5 schools that have a lot of money, the academic help you receive, if you don't pass your classes, you're not even giving any effort at all. So, and this probably keeps more kids eligible. I think more kids are going to realize, if I am eligible to play and I don't like it here, I'll go somewhere else. And like you said, maybe I'll go 3 places in 3 years, or 4 places in 4 years, or 5 places in 5 years. But that's all legal now. I think again the idea that you can remake rosters is definitely in play, and obviously in basketball, it's a lot easier to remake a roster, and that's why new coaches are expected to hit the ground running, and there really is no excuse anymore. Oh, I'm a first-year coach. You know, my roster wasn't very good. Well, that's your own fault.
Yeah. I read somewhere, like, in women's basketball, there's like 1,100 kids in the portal. Not all those kids are going to get a new place to call home. That's a lot of people that seem to be not very content with where they are.
Right, and people need to remember that if you're a Division I athlete that goes into the portal, maybe you're looking to go to Division II. But that is a lot of folks. It's for those of us who have a certain age, you know, it's hard to wrap your head around the idea that, man, I love cheering for this guy. Oh, next year he'll be at this school, and as a junior he'll be at this school, and as a senior he could be at yet a fourth school. So it does take some getting used to across all sports.
I'm very curious. Back when I signed my scholarship papers. It was a 4-year contract. And that was, we didn't think of anything else. It was like, oh gosh, I'm here for the next 4 years. Nobody could leave early. That was it. When did that change and become a year-to-year contract? And why did that happen? Was that more coach-driven?
I think it was because the irony is that that's what coaches wanted, because there were, obviously, and I'm sure you went through it at LSU, maybe there's a kid who signed and even his teammates are like, this dude ain't ever playing here. And the coach wanted him out of there. So eventually, you know, you tell somebody nicely, you know, you're not going to play here. Maybe you want to look somewhere else. And at certain schools, I think it was, you're not playing here, leave now. So that changed because of the coaches. And maybe like you said, you did play. Do you think that you would have remained at LSU all 4 years?
If I had not played?
If you came in as a freshman and saw and you played 6 minutes a game, would you have said, I'm going to stick it out, or I know I can play, I'm going somewhere else?
Wow, that's a great question. I'm glad I didn't have to, cross
and
my
I
mind.
Think people tend to forget that everybody's different. Some players have no problem staying somewhere for 4 years. I trust this coaching staff. I'm going to get better. But there also, I think, are players, just like there are, you know, like, you know, athletes are like, they're people too, so, you know. Yeah. And, man, I don't like going to school here. I want to go somewhere else. Or this major, man, they told me this major was a good major with great teachers. This is horrible. I can't take this.
Yeah.
I want to go somewhere else. So, you know,
some kids got homesick.
I think the majority of players are looking for more playing time, but there are players who are not happy where they are academically, or not happy where they are because of where they go to school. If you grow up in a big city, I think I want to go to a school in a small town, and then you get there and you're like, oh my God, this is horrible. I can't take this, and then you move on. But it does take getting used to, and more and more players are taking advantage, no question.
Yeah, it's crazy out there. Now, here's another one out there, not in the portal, but with NIL. They passed a law this morning in Virginia where schools in Virginia will be able to directly pay athletes via name, image, and likeness. This gives Virginia, they don't have to go to a third party or collaborative or whatever you want to call it. They can just write a check to the player themselves. I wonder how soon other schools are going to start doing
this. I mean, if you're Virginia Tech, if you're Virginia, if you're ODU, if you're George Mason, that's all well and good. How much money does your athletic department have? If that would have happened in the state of Ohio, for instance, I think that would have been far more important. Virginia doesn't have a large NIL program. Virginia Tech's got a better one. It's not elite. But at what point, and it goes back to, you know, something you and I have talked about the last couple months, you're asking your boosters/fan base, okay, we need you to give money to the school. If you majored in engineering, give money to the engineering department, please, so we can bring more students in. We also want you to give money to the boosters, the athletic boosters, so we can get better facilities. And now, hey, we also need you to give money so we can pay these players to play here. At what point does a fan base say, no, I'm not doing this. This is ridiculous. So, and I'm extremely interested to see how that all plays out in the state of Virginia. I assume it applies to, I don't know, does it apply to private schools in Virginia as well? That's a good question. So
that's a good question. I don't know.
It's going to be interesting to see how all that plays out.
Yeah. Times, they are a-changing. Now, I still think college football is going to break away. I've been saying it for 20 years.
Yeah, I think that's something else we've talked about. I think I can remember when the TV decision came down from the Supreme Court. I think it was in 1982 or 83. You had people saying, "Well, this is the opening Pandora's box. This is horrendous. This is going to cause college sports this huge schism, and there's going to be schools pulling away." Well, here we are 40 years later, and it is going to happen now. The question is how soon and how many teams are involved. The whole idea of that, 70-team league funded by private equity, I think that's ludicrous. But I think there is a – if you're LSU – if you're Georgia and you're in the SEC, why are we sharing equally with the likes of Vanderbilt and South Carolina? They bring nothing to the table. Same thing in the Big Ten. If you're Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan, wait a second here. Indiana, they don't pull their weight. And, basketball is totally separate. It's only about football. And that's why I think the idea of 70 teams is ludicrous, because – immediately there's going to be 30 teams in there that have no business being in there because they bring nothing to the table.
That's right. Mike Cuban,
it's like having a potluck and you bring prime rib and they bring a bag of chips from the gas station.
Yeah. Been there, gone to those kind of parties. Yes. I'm all about that. That's funny. That's a perfect way to view this thing. Spring football games. I don't take much out of any of those. Do you think there's going to be a seismic drop-off? Why do I think Alabama's still going to be good?
Well, I think they're still talented, and I think Kalen DeBoer's a good coach.
Yes.
And they still have a lot. They lost some key guys. Caleb Downs, for one, is the biggest, but they also have a bunch of talent remaining. And, the SEC West, this is going to be interesting because, LSU, I like Nussmeier. He's not as good as Jaden Daniels. What's Texas A&M going to be like under its new coach? I know the East and West is gone, but I still tend to look at it that way. You got Texas and Oklahoma coming in, Oklahoma breaking in a new starting quarterback. Alabama, Milroe wasn't elite last year. They got to the playoffs with Jalen Milroe, which means he's more than adequate. So, and he's back, and I think the offense is going to change. It's going to be – Alabama's still going to be good. It's not like, God, Nick Saban left, and they're going to be 3-9 like Mike DuBose is coaching them. So it is going to be this is going to be a fascinating season on a lot of levels in the SEC, Oklahoma and Texas are coming in.
Does Bobby Petrino save Sam Pittman's job at Arkansas?
Going by what Petrino did offensively last year at Texas A&M, big deal. But I think part of that was you had Petrino working with Jimbo Fisher, and by all accounts, Fisher was, no, it's still my offense. I don't think Sam Pittman is going to be, Bobby, I want you to do this, this, and this. I think Pittman is more like, my offensive line is going to be really good, Bobby Petrino, so you better call some good plays. So, and what's salvageable going is, did he have to go 8-4 to keep his job, or is 6-6 enough? And to me, Arkansas, it's much more like a 6-6 team than they are 8-4, 9-3 kind of team.
Who else is out there that Shane Beamer? Who else?
Well, Napier's on the hot seat. Beamer's on the hot seat. I think to an extent, the Vanderbilt coaching staff, they certainly have been really bad. That program has a ton of issues when it comes to NIL. But Clark Lee, I think, is, he's certainly not set. That's for sure. It's interesting season in the SEC, but I think Beamer and Napier, I think especially, I live in Florida, and maybe people out of the state don't really know, but there is a very vocal faction of the fan base that is extremely ticked off he is there for year three. So, and those people, they open with Miami. They also play UCF early. If they lose those two games, oh, my goodness.
Speaking of coaches, what'd you think of Kentucky basketball? Mark Pope, part of that 1996 national championship team, goes to BYU, has won zero NCAA tournament games as a head coach.
Yeah, I think it's interesting from a fan base. Oh, you know, we can, you know, well, Calipari left, so, you know, we'll get Donovan or Danny Hurley. You know, it's ridiculous. But Pope, it's, you know, the name factor is not there for, I think, the casual fan. The guy at BYU, like you said, he hasn't even won an NCAA tournament game. But then you look at what happened on Saturday when they introduced him. They sold out Rupp Arena. It was free. They didn't really sell it out. But there were people who could not get in for the introductory thing. They drive in a bunch of former players, including a lot of guys off that specific national title team. Pope gets off the bus last, and he's holding the national championship trophy, and the crowd goes berserk. And, you know, one thing I think Calipari sort of lost track of, and one thing that Pope will not, is that Pope is going to make it. I think Calipari at times, his players worried more about the name on the back of the jersey than the front. I don't think that's going to be a problem for Pope. He is an alum. He bleeds Kentucky blues, what everybody says. A lot of former players have spoken up and said, my God, this guy is awesome, phenomenal hire. No, he's not Jalen Calipari, but he'll do things differently, and all the fans are going to love it. And then they announced yesterday that there's going to be a Kentucky St. John series because Pitino was Pope's coach. So, Pope runs a very good offense. If you watch BYU play, that was a fun offense to watch. Now, they weren't overly talented, I didn't think, or extremely athletic.
You shoot the three,
but he's going to get better players. So this, I think this could end up being a good hire, but at the same time, it's Kentucky, and even if he is a UK alum, you know, if he goes the first 2 years of Kentucky without winning an NCAA tournament game, he's gone.
He's gone. Who has a better season? Cal at Arkansas or Pope at Kentucky?
I think Pope at Kentucky. I really do. I don't think Arkansas. I read last week that when Calipari was hired, Arkansas had zero players on its roster. Now,
that's
obviously,
right.
Some guys who signed with UK are going to follow Calipari to Arkansas. But you know, for all this, oh my God, Arkansas hired Calipari. Look around. Was anybody scared to play Kentucky like they used to be? No, because chances are you were playing a Kentucky team that didn't know how to play defense and didn't care. I think they're going to be a better defensive team at UK with Pope. I'll be honest also, Calipari hadn't won an NCAA tournament game at Kentucky since 2019.
Unbelievable.
Why all of a sudden is that going to change at Arkansas?
Yeah. He's Mike Huguenin. He's the best in the business. Sounds like Cal knows what Matt McMahon had to go through. So not a player, not a coach. We'll see what happens. Mike, thank you so much, buddy. We'll get back on the regular schedule next week. Thank you. All right. Well, back to wrap things up after this final timeout.
Helping you get through your workday. This is ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
All right, back finishing touches on this Thursday, April 18th. Special thanks to our guest, Preston Guy, LSU football, Bob Rose on the Saints, Scott Rabelais, LSU gymnastics. Let's go win a title, and Mike Huguenin in all things sports. James, let's, speaking of Bob Rose, Saints poll question of the day. Offensive line had to win this thing, but by how much?
Well, there was actually a vote towards the end of the show going towards defensive line. It had the same amount of votes as wide receiver, both at 3%, 7% had said other, and then 86% of the votes had said offensive tackle.
Okay. When's the next mock draft coming?
Currently working on it right now, and I'll be posting it tomorrow.
You got to make some trades. You got to change it up, man. You got to go wheeling and dealing. Make some bold moves here, James. Come on now.
Usually I don't. But because of how the moves have gone down in free agency and the fact that the Vikings traded for another pick in the first round, it leads me to believe that they'll be looking to go into the top five. So if you look at it tomorrow, you may see a couple surprises.
They're coming. They may go even higher than five. I'm not sold. New England doesn't want to trade back a little bit and collect some assets. We'll see. We'll see what happens. All right. It was on this day, April 18th, kind of a change of the guard with one year and another year. Back in 1995, oh boy, quarterback Joe Montana announced his retirement from football. And then just 3 years later, in 1998, the NFL draft, Tennessee quarterback Peyton Manning becomes the first pick of the draft by the Indianapolis Colts. Both Hall of Famers, both all-time greats, both on this day in sports history. Tomorrow, a fun-filled Friday, so be sure to join us then. Thanks to everyone for joining us today. Thanks to our partners that make it possible. Until tomorrow, I'm Jordy Helfrich. Stay thirsty, my friends. Do everything you can to stay healthy. Work out. Take care of yourself. Be kind to one another, by all means. Be happy. AFR is next. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday, everybody.